Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the CBS Sports NBA Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore. You can find me on Twitter at MattMooreCBS. We are available on SoundCloud and Stitcher and iTunes, of course. And you should leave us reviews and let us know. Hit me up on Twitter at MattMooreCBS and let me know guests that you would like us to reach out to and talk to. For today's episode, so I recorded a couple podcasts the last couple of days. One was with Adam Mares, who works for Vice and DenverStiffs.com. He's located in Denver. I talked to him after the Rockets blew the doors off of the Nuggets on Friday night. Couldn't get to over the weekend because it's the weekend, and then had some difficulties yesterday with audio. So we're posting it today, though, because he's got some interesting thoughts on both the Nuggets. He also did a big breakdown on Kemba Walker, and Kemba Walker is not getting enough hype, really, for the season that he's having. He's having one of the most efficient seasons that we've seen as far as jump shooting for a non-Warriors entity in the last couple of years. He's having a phenomenal season, and he did a great breakdown. I've linked that in the post, which you can find on CBSSports.com and wherever you find this podcast. You can find that article. Really great stuff from Adam. We also talked about the Nuggets. Since that game, the Nuggets lost a closer one versus the Jazz. They made a good effort on back-to-back, and they beat the Sixers on Monday, so they've kind of stabilized things, but there's still just a lot of concerns, I think, with Denver and where they're at. We'll see if they can turn it around, but Friday was definitely a low point. I also check in with James Herbert, and we talk about all manner of things, including we never got to talk about Draymond's whole kicking episode, his latest kicking episode, so I did want to talk to him about that, and we just kind of bounced around a little bit, and it's a good talk. So, hope you guys enjoy this episode of the CBS Sports NBA Podcast. Adam Mares from DenverStiffs.com and Vice. He is a phenomenal writer. He's done work at Nylon Calculus. He lives in Denver. I know him well. Adam, thanks for joining me.
Matt, thanks for that intro, and thanks for having me on.
So, we're going to bounce around the league, but we just witnessed the Denver Nuggets, who were facing the Houston Rockets, on a back-to-back after going to double overtime versus the Warriors in Oakland, then get on a plane, fly to Denver, get into their hotel around 5 a.m., just absolutely clock Denver. They ran them out of their own building. It is the worst loss of the season for Denver, and it has everyone from front office officials to media to coaches to players asking, where do we go from here? So I will start with this question. Is this a loss that you have to get away from a little bit before making a decision, or based off of the already disappointing start, which featured several close losses, is it time for Denver to start really reevaluating where the season is headed in terms of their roster?
It's a little bit of both. I'm inclined for them to not make any rash decisions in this instant or even in this month. I think the Nuggets have a handful of things working against them right now, including injuries, some lineup issues. This wasn't their best team tonight, obviously missing Nikola Jokic, Danilo Gallinari fresh back from an injury. So those aren't excuses. Tonight was just a terrible performance by a team that looked like they didn't even care, didn't have it together. But I'm inclined for them. I thought a week ago they were on an upward trend. They had their worst game of the year on Wednesday against the Heat, and their new worst game of the year tonight against the Rockets. So it's kind of, for me, it's more of a two-game sample size than it is, looking at the whole year.
I think the problem is with I've got to is if the roster made sense, but the players were bad, I would get sticking with it and keeping it through and hoping the players improved. If the players were good and the roster didn't make sense, I would get sticking through it because you'd say, look, we can figure out something. We know these players are good. But you go up and down this roster, and you've got Danilo Gallinari, who is just simply not stepping up. Like, he is just not the player. This guy is billed as, if not the best player, then certainly the most well-known player league-wide. He is the number one trade asset. He is the guy that has said that he wants to stay in Denver, that he loves it here, and he wants to be the leader of this team. And he left Trevor Ariza wide open. He is passive on offense. He seems to only take certain opportunities, and then he's trying to draw fouls. He's just not, it's just, there's missing shots, and there's playing badly. And Danilo Gallinari is playing badly, and that is a huge issue for this team. But the rest of the roster is a problem. You go up and down and you say, who is really good on this roster? And you say, Jamal Murray has the capacity to be really good in the future. Wilson Chandler is playing the best of any Denver Nugget right now. He is their lifeblood. He is playing the best that they have. Nikola Jokic is a playmaker and he continues to shine. And the team's plus minus is exceptional when he is on the court versus when he is off the floor. everyone else you look at, you know, Jameer Nelson is who he is, but at least Jameer is rock solid, but he's just not at that point in his career anymore. Like, he's just right. past that point. Darrell Arthur, too injury prone, not able to make a significant difference. Darrell's always going to be a role player. He's never going to be that kind of guy. Will Barton, he gives such great effort, and he gave great effort again tonight, and he has a lot of skills, but Barton is always going to be best in a six-man role
right.
where he provides a nice counter off the bench as a guy that can come in and make a little bit of a difference. He's a better version of Iman Shumpert is basically where we're at with him, and probably not the defender Shumpert is. Up and down the roster, like, there's just all of these guys that are mid-tier. You don't know what the future is, and if you're going to do that and you're going to have this logjam, they just have got to start pulling the trigger. This team has waited too long on several deals they needed to make, and it's cost them in return. I think they have to start looking at trying to convert some of this roster into something that makes sense.
They definitely need to consolidate these assets. There's too many guys on the team that are jumbled together, as you mentioned. I'm a little bit higher on certain combinations of guys. I think part of their problem is Yusef Nurkic, Kenneth Faried, Emmanuel Mudiay. I think those three guys in particular hurt this roster a lot more than they help. And there's a good roster in this Nuggets, in the collection of guys they have. Not a great one, but a good one, with the Jokic, Gallo, Wilson, Jamal Murray. You know, they have some pieces that I think are very exciting and fit together. But unfortunately, with injuries and then also just with some of, you know, who's starting and where guys are playing minutes, we're getting a lot of minutes with really, really bad pairings. Mudiay, Nurkic, and Faried are a big negative when the three of them are on the court. It's been that way all year. I don't know if they've had a single positive stretch all year, but I think right now there's something at like negative 20 points per 100 possessions when they're together. That's a starting trio. So I think there's some good... I still have some optimism that there's some good things going on with this Nuggets team, but unfortunately there's some bad things that are overwhelming everything else on the roster.
Denver fans have turned on Michael Malone. Like, there's a huge movement now of just wondering whether Michael Malone is the guy. And everyone in Sacramento is going to be confused because he was beloved there and the team played great. And even last year, I think that there's probably, from a national perspective, going to be a lag because, look, Denver was a mess under Brian Shaw, and they hated each other, and they didn't play for one another, and the chemistry was bad, and the culture was rotten. I don't think the culture is bad right now. The chemistry is bad. What we saw on the court tonight was terrible body language that indicated a team that was not together.
The Brian Shaw era was tonight for a year and a half.
Yeah.
Like, it was a long period of really, really bad losses, bad effort, bad locker room vibes, all those things.
But I think the problem is that Malone took them from the basement to that first level.
Right.
But this year they were expected to climb to the second floor. And they look closer to the basement than they do the second floor, and that's dangerous. Now, again, we're in December. It's still just a handful of games. It's less than 24 games. There's a lot of time here for them to, you know, if they go on a six-game run, we're starting with this road trip, or if they go on a six-game run in January or whenever, like, things can turn very quickly with a roster, but I think my concern with Malone, as much as I do like him as a coach and respect him and the things that he stands for, he's really struggling with a deep rotation.
Mm-hmm.
He just has no real feel for who should be playing and when or who fits together. There aren't lineups or combos that he goes to. It's just all pieced together. And the things that he does rely on, like playing Emmanuel Mudiay heavy minutes or going to Faried at the five, wind up with really damaging perspectives. Mudiay's 19, and you just hate to kill the kid and put this much pressure on him, but the problems that he has are not, oh, he's not shooting well, or, oh, he's still trying to figure stuff out. It's really basic, don't dribble the ball to the other team stuff, and that you just can't live with. And you're seeing, this is the other problem of having a roster that's half made up of veterans and half made up of young guys, because the veterans do not have time in their careers to wait for Emmanuel Mudiay to finally get it because they don't know when that's going to be. And that means that they don't trust their point guard. And if you don't trust your starting point guard who's on the floor for 30-plus minutes a night, it's not going to work. And it's not.
We saw this a lot last year where Danilo Gallinari would be out on a two-on-one break with Emmanuel Mudiay, and Emmanuel Mudiay would miss the shot or turn it over or something like that. And you just saw you know, the wind go out of Gallo's sail, not just for that possession, but for the rest of the game. Because, like you said, he realized that he's playing with a young point guard that needs opportunities to grow, and that's really tough when you're an in-your-prime veteran.
Now on the other side, Houston. Good golly. Good golly. I mean, look, the Nuggets were absolute. They were hot garbage rolling down a hill tonight. But the Rockets came in a situation where they were supposed to be giving up a schedule loss, just rolled them. And, you know, Ryan Anderson's found a shot. Eric Gordon is playing fantastic. Like, he's just so good on both ends. Like, he's dogging everybody coming around screens. He's making plays. He's passing. I mean, James Harden didn't even have a really good game.
Right.
James Harden was pretty bad tonight. He looked dog-ass tired. This Rockets team, do you think long-term that this team might be able to make some noise in the West? Because I'm kind of starting to think, like, I guess I'll say this, they are not a team that I'm going to want to walk into in a second round matchup.
I don't like them as a playoff team, and it's kind of funny, the longer I follow the league, the more I watch the regular season with an eye towards the playoffs. Coach Donovan in Oklahoma City last year had that incredible quote about how the regular season was an experiment to be prepared for all situations. I love this Rockets team. They're one of my favorite teams, probably top three favorite team to watch this season already. The offense they run is just beautiful. All the players, Anderson, Trevor Ariza, you mentioned Gordon, they're all in their comfort zone. I mean, as much as anybody, they feel like they're in their comfort zone and just they know what they're doing. They know what they're supposed to do. They have confidence to do what they're supposed to do. I do think that it's going to be – they are a team that just can't defend in the half court, and I'm not sure that you know, with some of the juggernaut half-court teams that there are in the Western Conference, I'm not sure that they're going to be successful against teams like the Clippers and the Warriors and maybe even the Spurs. So I really enjoy watching them as a regular season team. I'm skeptical on their outlook in the playoffs.
I like the way they match up. The Spurs always have problems with big, long, hyper-athletic centers, and Clint Capella fits that to a T. The Spurs defense is a really big question mark that nobody's talking about right now. Like, I've started looking really deep into the numbers and watching video. They're on they've won like 11 of 12, but this team is not the same squad. And if you have a defensive weakness, Houston will tear you to pieces. And you combine that with Harden and his ability to control those when it grinds down to possession by possession basketball. Plus, I think this team's defensive upside is pretty high. I like them in a matchup with San Antonio versus the Clippers. Yeah, the Clippers tend to, when you start getting them into an up-and-down game, when it starts rushing up and down the court, they start falling for that. They don't have the patience. Even Paul, as good as he is, doesn't have the patience all the time to be like, all right, let's slow it down, grind it out. And, surprisingly, it makes no sense. This makes zero sense, but sometimes it's just the way the world works. Teams are having great success running on the Warriors. It doesn't make any sense, but the one thing that we've learned is if you go right back at them and you have an athletic big, you're going to at least have a remote chance, and that's all we're really talking about here. So I like the way they match up with the top three teams in the West.
The Clippers and Rockets are such an interesting one, and I hope we get a series between those two, at least with the way things are shaping up right now, because they are two teams that I think would have a tremendous amount of pressure on each, you know, feeling a lot of pressure in a playoff series. With a playoff series, James Harden, tonight you talked about James Harden had a bad game and the other guys came through. Can they do that in a playoff series for four games? And are there teams out there that can, maybe not take away James Harden, because I think he might be he's in the discussion for best offensive players right now just the way he's playing with his team. But are there guys out there that can maybe slow him down to 70% of what he does? And then, you know, is Ariza going to go 3 for 3 to start the game? You know, like he did tonight. That's the only thing that I would question with this team, and that's why I'm kind of a little bit more cautious about them.
The Cavs are slumping a little bit.
Yeah,
they're in a weird place. They're just in a weird spot right now. It's
classic LeBron for me.
Yeah,
for me it's classic. I mean, I really like the team. They had a kind of a soft schedule. I think LeBron's in his most comfortable spot that he's been. I mean, he looks as comfortable to me in his role, just like we're talking about the Rockets. I think he looks so comfortable with this team. But this is a classic LeBron. He knows it's December. He's got a team that had no reason not to show up for the nationally televised game, and of course they don't and get blown out. So for me, every year, I think for the last 6 or 7 years, there's been some point where I, with a LeBron team, whether it was the Heat or the Cavs, where I thought, what's going on with this team? And then they're always in the finals. So I think he knows. I really like this team's collection of talent. I think they're going to peak in March, April, May, and June. And they kind of peaked early this year with the start of the season, but I'm not worried about them.
He was livid after the game. I do like the fact that he still cares that much.
Yeah.
Like, he's still, like, it's kind of amazing because, like, Paul Pierce, after he won the title, like, the Celtics would just coast for months and months and months. And you could tell that they were just like, we're struggling right now and we definitely need to fix it. It's fine. And then instead, LeBron, like, genuinely seems to be like, no, like, this is not acceptable. Like, we need to be better. I appreciate that he's got that kind of commitment to the game, and I'm sure that they're going to be okay. This is also, like, look, the Clippers are a really great team. They lost on national television to those guys.
Right.
They turned around and had a back-to-back in Chicago.
Another tough one.
LeBron had to wear a Cubs uniform. It's a tough break.
It's got to hurt your confidence.
You had a really great article this week on Vice talking about the Hornets and Kemba Walker and how they're using... how they're using two bigs to screen.
Yeah.
Really interesting stuff. What have you seen... Here's a question. Kemba's numbers are a little bit ridiculous right now. He's the best off-the-dribble shooter in the league right now. That's just freakish. You commented in there, I thought it was really interesting, on his turnover rate. Like, for a guy of his usage rate, he's just not turning the ball over at all at a rate better than anybody else in the league. Like, that's just nuts what he's doing right now. I think we probably have to assume that there's going to be some slippage. If that happens, are the rest of the Hornets, from what you've seen, good enough to sustain?
This is another team that's like the Rockets for me, where I really love what they're doing. I think they're going to be a good regular season team, and will be in. I might even pick them as a top four seed right now, just looking at the talent and their style of play, the way they're coached. I don't know if they can. I don't know how they're going to match up in a lot of the Eastern Conference playoff series. But yeah, you mentioned Kemba Walker. So the starting point when you watch them is, wow, Kemba's doing amazing things. He's taking four off-the-dribble pull-up threes, a la Steph Curry, Damian Lillard, and James Harden, the only other guys to attempt four off-the-dribble pull-up three-pointers per game. And he's making them more efficiently than all four of those guys. So I don't think that's sustainable, but I do think it's going to be something he continues to shoot. And even if that number drops 2 or 3 percentage points, it's still a really, really, really effective use of him because it creates so much gravity. Guys have to go over the screen on him because he's a threat to pull up at any moment. On top of that, I think what Clifford's built with using the two screeners, they bring Cody Zeller, who's one of the best screening big men in all of the NBA, and Frank Kaminsky, who I think makes really good reads on the screen. So a lot of times Zeller will hit the first guy and they'll fight through that screen, and then Kaminsky will hit him again. He has to fight through a second screen. And Kaminsky's been very good, I think, at taking that second screen and then creating some space. So, long story short, I think the Hornets are perfectly utilizing those three guys, and especially Kemba Walker's skill set, to allow him to get in his comfort zone and make reads that he's designed to make in the pick and roll.
Kemba's just having a nuts season. Like, he's been so good. He's clutch and he's fun and he's out of the efficiency. And I love the way this Hornets team has been put together. Rich Joe's just done a phenomenal job. You know, Kaminsky's a guy that, like, I loathed him as a prospect. Loved him as a college player. Right. Loathed him as a prospect.
Right.
Hated the pick. Why didn't they take the Celtics 4 picks for him? Why didn't they take Justice Winslow? But Kaminsky is a decent role player. Like,
right.
He is a good rotation player that gives them quality minutes and can do some stuff. I don't like it when he tries to do anything on his own, but I think that kind of thing really helps them. And they're doing this. They're still winning games without Marvin Williams, who's out with a knee injury.
Right.
So, like, that's really impressive.
I was going to say, I think with this team, they ask Kemba to do a lot of things. They put him in a comfortable spot to do those things, but they ask him to do a lot. They ask Batum to do quite a bit, actually. They don't ask anybody else to do anything they can't do. Cody Zeller just goes out there and sets screens, rebounds, defends. He doesn't do anything else. He's not asked to do it. He doesn't step out of his lane. He just does it. Kaminsky, same thing. He does have somewhat of a limited skill set on both sides of the court, but on offense, he knows his 2 or 3 things he's supposed to do. And I think when you can provide a team with that kind of understanding of what they're supposed to do, it makes things easy, and it helps them to reach their potential or at least get close.
So, last thing I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about something super basketball nerdish.
Yes.
Guard screening. This has become a huge thing in the NBA right now, and I'm noticing how dangerous it is because, like, the Warriors last night, like, KD brought the ball up, and Steph sets a screen on Ariza for Klay, and there's just nothing you can do. Like, there's just zero you can do with that. The Cavs do something really similar where Kyrie screens for LeBron, and, of course, they have to jump out and double LeBron because he's LeBron, and then, you know, Kyrie's cutting right to the basket. I mean, it's just... It makes me wonder, like, do guys need to be hitting these guards harder to deter that screening? Because I don't know any other way to break that up. I think it's the only way to do it because, you know, even rotation help, if you hit the roll, the screen man there on the roll, that's a guard, which means right. He's going to be able to make the perfect pass to be able to find the outside shooter. So I feel like the only real way to do this is to rough him up on screens.
The only thing you can do without roughing players up is to try to switch it. And very few teams can switch anybody onto Steph Curry and be okay with it. There's very few. There are a couple, but they're very few. The other thing you can do is rough them up, and I do think that there are... I do think that's something that did happen this last year in the playoffs, and I think it's something that's going to happen again this year in the playoffs, and that's why this Warriors team, for me, is as much fun as they are to watch, and this offense is just incredible, and it's humming. It's almost like the regular season doesn't matter for them either because they're only going to be judged by what happens in the playoffs, and the playoffs are going to be very, very, very different than the regular season for them. You look at their numbers. They're scoring at these historic rates after a defensive rebound and in transition. Historic rates. You get them in the half court, and they're very, very good. They're top three, but I think they're actually ranked third on after-made buckets. LeBron James is the best in the league at slowing the pace down. At not allowing transition baskets. So for me, this Warriors team, and I think every team's going to take a page out of that book, yeah, rough them up on those plays, make them work, and then just slow that game down to a half-court game and take them out of their comfort zone.
All right, three quick questions. Rapid fire here, okay?
Let's do it.
Would you rather have Kristaps Porzingis or Nikola Jokic?
Kristaps Porzingis has more upside than Nikola Jokic. And Jokic is one of my favorite players in the entire league. He's my favorite nugget. But Kristaps Porzingis is 7'3". He's shooting 40% from behind the arc. He just has more upside.
All right. Would you take Giannis Antetokounmpo right now?
Okay. Right now? Just this season?
Right now. Well, for the future going forward. Or there's another good one. Carl Anthony Towns.
That's a fun one. I would take Towns, though. I think...
Me too.
It's a tough one, but I actually feel pretty confident that Towns is just a more dynamic and impactful player, and I think he's still just skimming the surface of what he's going to be here in 4 or 5 years.
Okay, and are the Nuggets going to pull out of this?
Oh, man, if you would have asked me this 4 hours ago, it would have been such a clear yes, because one bad game is one thing. Two bad games in a row at home, that's a different thing. I'm going to say yes, but I don't say that with any confidence.
When schedule losses become bad losses for the home teams. That's Adam Mara's advice, DenverSniffs.com, Nylon Calculus. Adam, thanks for joining me.
Matt, thanks for having me.
So this NBA season has been amazing. It's just been incredible in terms of the individual performances. Any given night, you're going to see something crazy, whether it's James Harden going off for 31-15 or Russell Westbrook getting another triple-double or Klay Thompson going for 60 points in three quarters or even Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's putting up just ridiculous numbers. Every single night, there seems to be some sort of crazy performance going on, and you guys want to be there. You want to see it live, and to do so, I've got a way for you to be able to get $20 off of your tickets, and that's with SeatGeek. SeatGeek has the absolute best tickets for any game that you want to go to. Any event that you want to go to, they've got what you're looking for. It's never been easier to get seats you want for great value. They've got the best deals on every ticket in the house, wherever you want to sit. That's wherever in the building that you're going to, they can get you the tickets. They're always going to price, they're going to compare on all of the prices that are available to get you the best deals. Prices can vary depending on wherever you shop, but SeatGeek's always going to find the best available price for you. And they want to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. And you're going to see those underpriced seats and be able to snatch those up before somebody else gets to them. That's why having the app is so great. Plus, if you download the app, and you go into the settings tab and click add a promo code, enter promo code IEYE, you're going to get $20 after you made your first ticket purchase. That's for listening to this podcast. You can go see Klay Thompson tear it up. You can go see James Harden put up something ridiculous. Go check out. The NBA right now is just phenomenal. If you guys want to go see it live, which is getting to be a really great show on a nightly basis, SeatGeek is the best way to do it. All right, join me now on CBS Sports NBA podcast. Jukin Jivin, Jimmy Herbert, how are you?
I'm stationary. Like, I am not juking, nor am I jiving.
Nor jiving? Neither one. I thought about, in light of the Warriors' recent comments about being asked about marijuana, with Steve Kerr having used it for his back pain, I thought about doing, like, herbal herbaire. That's something that I consider doing.
That could get me in trouble, even though I'm not saying anything. But I don't know if that nickname would go over that well. His comments were interesting, though.
All comments from the Warriors are interesting. Can I ask you this? Like, they're aware that they keep – like, I know that they get asked stuff and they can – but, like, they create this constant swirl around them. Like, that's just something that, like, is constantly happening. And Brian Curtis over at The Ringer had a thing on this about how Draymond in particular, like, likes it. Like, he wants to cause these kind of little firestorms. But, like, the Warriors know that, like, when they speak and if they talk – like, if you talk about marijuana – everyone's going to be talking about marijuana. If you talk about these different things, like, these are always going to be conversations that occur. And they seem to handle it fine. It's just I don't want to hear any like you know, we're just sick of the media. I don't want to hear that from them, because, like, you create a lot of this stuff for yourself. Like, you choose to have these conversations.
Yeah. No, I mean, and that piece, like, everybody should read that piece by Brian Curtis on The Ringer. I thought that was a really good look into just the dynamics of dealing with the most scrutinized team in basketball and the most interesting team in basketball, maybe in all sports. And yeah, I mean, they definitely know that they can make news whenever they want by saying anything even marginally interesting. And yeah, to a certain degree, that means they can't really complain. But I think regardless of what they said, just by virtue of who is on the team, they are going to be surrounded by just an insane amount of local and national media all year. And that isn't – I don't think that's necessarily because they say these things. I just think that's because of the talent on the team and who they are. So if they want to whine about the amount of people following them, they still can. But I don't think they will. I think they knew what this was going to be like because they went through the streak last year and they went through the playoffs last year. And this is just their new reality. And they deal with it about as well as you could ever expect professional athletes to deal with that kind of thing.
Okay, we haven't talked since the latest Kickgate. So
– yes.
So, okay. Let's just – approach it very gently. Do you have thoughts and feelings on the matter of Draymond's kicking?
I mean, you're going to get mad at me for saying this, but my only thought and feeling about it is, like, I'm tired of hearing about
it. No, I understand.
Like, it is the most exhausting storyline.
I get that it's tiresome, and there's a really easy way for it to go away. He could stop kicking people.
He could stop. Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
Like, that's a real easy way for everyone to not have to talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because, like, I don't think anybody is super wrong. Like, when I see what Vandeweghe said, I don't think it's bad that the league is not happy with the limbs flailing all over the place and people potentially getting kicked or hit in the head. Like, That's a player safety issue. That makes sense to me. But then when I hear Draymond say what he said about an unnatural act and about look at what James Harden does, like, I get that because every night I watch basketball and every night I see some shooter taking a three-pointer, kicking out his legs like Reggie Miller did, and that's supposed to be an offensive foul, and it's rarely called as one. So I don't think it's just a Draymond Green issue because we see this all the time.
But Westbrook was
some of it is natural, some of it is unnatural. Like, I don't think we can always tell based on watching the replay which it is, because there's a lot of physics that go into that. But yeah, like we've dissected this from every possible angle already.
Like, here's the thing. The whole idea of, like, he's getting singled out. No, he's not. Westbrook got tagged for one. Westbrook picked up a tech for a kick earlier this season. Like, they have gotten other guys. It's happened. So,
I don't know what, like, I don't know what we're talking about. I really just don't know what we're talking about. And then, like, BJ Armstrong coming out and saying it's hurting the kids the way that the game is being, like, ruled and legislated. Like, what are we talking about?
That's too far for me. I can't get with that at all.
Like, what are we talking about? Like, everything with the Warriors, see, it is interesting that everything with the Warriors, like, if you criticize the Warriors, it winds up becoming, like, a moralist crusade. Like, it's just really weird how it plays out on social media and in the media that, like, you know, the KD thing, it became, like, this whole thing about, like, don't constrain player agency versus being like, well, no, he can do whatever he wants. It's just a bummer. Like, anything that the Warriors are criticized by, it winds up evolving into, like, a moralist issue. And maybe that's just the times that we live in where we're so divided on everything, but I'm just, like, fascinated by it. I think, to me, the crazy part is that he turned around the next night and did it to Marquese Chris. Like, he just turns around the next night. The leg
came up again. Yeah, it's like...
And then, like, you were on shift, and you were like, I don't know if he even got him. And I looked at it, and I was like, oh, yeah, maybe you're right. You're like, I think he was just, like, holding his hand because he got... He thought he picked up a foul. And then, like, we see the photo this morning of Marquese Chris's hand, which is all jacked up from Draymond kicking it. So, no.
Yeah, it probably did connect. It wasn't that clear when it happened to me whether or not it connected. But, yeah, I mean, look, I think it goes... both directions for the Warriors, though. Like, you're saying it gets turned into a moralist. You're like, how dare you say this about them? But then, like, on the other hand, it's like, I'll tweet, like, a Draymond Green highlight of, like, him making a defensive play, and then I'll get all these people in my mentions, like, mad 3-1. At me saying he's trash. Yeah, like, 3-1. People hate him. Yeah. People really hate him.
I
realize that people also love him, but that's just sort of how it is with this team now.
I love him. I love, like, here's the thing. He's kicking. I think he should be punished. I don't agree with, like, Tom Zeller, who's like, there needs to be punitive action, and there's, like, discussion, and then people want him, like, suspended. No. Just watch for it. And when he kicks people, give him a flagrant. If he kicks people again, give him another flagrant. Like, that's what it should be. If you kick a person, that's a flagrant foul. This is the amazing thing, is I'm just like, what are we talking about? Like, this is not rocket science. We don't have to have, like, a lot of nuanced conversation. Like, we're talking about, some people are out there about, like, well, no, it's physics, and you understand, like, as you're trying to balance your, like, don't kick people. Don't kick people. My son learned this before he was in kindergarten. We had a whole conversation about, we don't kick people. That's not what we do. Like, not even kindergarten. In preschool, he and I had a conversation. In junior kindergarten, we had a whole, like, 4-day event of us talking about, like, we don't kick people. And I made sure. And you know what? He has not kicked another person. And I get that that these guys do things that draw fouls. I get that there's a lot of stuff that goes uncalled. And I get that, I even get to a certain degree the idea of, like, some of this stuff. Part of it's, like, how high his leg goes up. Right? Like, if Harden was diving at the floor and Draymond kicked out a little bit and kicked him in the head, I'd be like, oh, that's unfortunate, but, like, that clearly is not a big deal. But even if it's accidental, like, why are you kicking your leg as high as a rocket? Why is this a thing that is happening?
Is that kind of impressive to you, though, that, like, his leg actually gets that much
height? I'm really impressed with his flexibility. Like, that dude has to do yoga. I mean, it's genuinely impressive. I saw the Rockets on Friday after that Warriors game Thursday, and the Nuggets, that was, like, the worst possible. And we, like, the Nuggets media picked up on it about 20 minutes before tip. We're like, they're gonna lose this game, they're gonna lose this game, because we realized that Malone was gonna start for Reed, because he after the Jokic-Nurkic combo fell apart, he couldn't justify doing anything else. And so Fareed's back in the starting lineup, and Kenneth Fareed can't guard stretch fours. It's been a thing for 3 years. He's never going to be able to guard stretch fours. I do not understand why 3 different Nuggets coaches, George Karl, Brian Shaw, and Michael Malone, continue to start Kenneth Fareed when he's facing a stretch four. Like, no matter what big a fuss he pitches over not starting, no matter what his agent says, no matter how popular he is, Kenneth Fareed should not start against a stretch four. Ryan Anderson had, like, 3 3-pointers in the first quarter. I mean, the Rockets just, like, they are really impressive right now. I've got a number 3 in power rankings and do not feel bad about it at all. Like, that's how – that Warriors win was that good, and they're just – their defensive metrics, I don't feel like, reveal how good they are defensively, because Eric Gordon right now is just – he is attached – to whoever he is guarding, and he is off ball, just chasing through screens and staying connected on guys' hips the whole way.
Yeah. I mean, they're, what, like, 27th in defensive efficiency? Yeah. Like, the numbers look bad, but I mean, they're 13-7. Their offense is insane. And I don't know if the Nuggets get, like, I don't know how much you can take from that, but I think it's worth something that they got in at like 5 a.m. and then came out and dropped like 40 plus points, whatever it was, in the first quarter of that game.
Yeah.
Like that, I think that was pretty impressive.
So the last thing I want to talk to you about is Giannis Antetokounmpo. So
let's do it. I'm always happy to talk about Giannis. You could call me at like 4 a.m, wake me up and be like, I want to talk about Giannis, and I would yawn. I might be a little disoriented, but I would do it.
I will do this now. I will absolutely 100% do this. I will now be calling you to discuss Giannis Antetokounmpo. They're 10-8. They came out of nowhere. They are now the 5th seed in the Eastern Conference right now. They came out of nowhere after being, you know, really unimpressive the first 2 weeks of the season. They're 7-4 at home. They're 3-4 on the road. They're 6-4 in their last 10. They are just really impressive overall, but mostly they're just impressive because of how good Giannis is. And he's good in every single category. Like, he's blocking shots and then getting the rebound and chasing it up the floor and then making a pass and then getting it back and dunking. I mean, he's just – like, there's just nothing outside of the three-point shot that he hasn't shown right now. Like, that's – he's just – he's like a 7-foot Westbrook right now.
Yeah, like, you know, when we talk about, like – like, let's say when you talk about, like, Ricky Rubio or something over the years, it's like he is good at literally everything except the jump shot. Like, imagine when he gets the jump shot. It's like, okay, so that's true of Giannis, but since he's also 6'11", it's not really that relevant that he can't shoot. Like, yeah, if he had that shot, then it would change his game dramatically. Defense would have to guard him differently. But, like, he could be a Hall of Famer without a jump shot. Like, that's how good he is at everything else. And it is crazy the way – like, the pace that he plays at, to me, for how young he is actually in control of the game as a point guard. I think it took him a little time to get there, but I think he's starting to think the game better. And physically, I mean, it's nuts the way that he covers ground in transition, the way that he puts up the stat lines, like, in the sort of Westbrookian way where sometimes you look at halftime and he almost has a triple-double, and it's like, oh, like, when the hell did that happen? Like, that's sort of what it's like when you watch the Bucks lately. And he just has such a huge load to carry for that team, but not in like the traditional sense. Like, he doesn't have to do what like a Harden or Westbrook does offensively every night. Like, he can get 15-16 points and it doesn't mean that they can't win, but he just has to do all of it. Like, he has to hit the boards, he has to play good defense, he has to push the pace, he has to get other guys open looks. He does a little bit of everything all the time, and he seems to be taking it all in stride. Like, I mean, I think he turns 22 tomorrow or today if this is going up on Tuesday, in which case, happy birthday. But like, he plays like a guy that's a lot older than that. And I think the Bucks deserve some credit for the way that they've brought him along in the system and kind of given him more and more responsibility. And then at a certain point, I guess the second half of last year, just saying, all right, you're going to be the point guard. You're going to take some lumps, but we're going to make you into like a player that the league has really never, like, we've never seen a guy like this.
22-9-6-2-2. He's averaging 2 steals and 2 blocks per game, shooting 53% from the field. I mean,
it's nuts.
It's just nuts. And like, he really, like, I've watched the Cavs game and the Raptors game, and he just took it to those guys. He's on a really hot stretch right now. Like, his last 5 games have pretty much been the best of his career. I like how he and Dellavedova play together. I like how he and
such a good fit.
I like how he and Beasley play together. Like, Beasley's largely one-dimensional, but...
You're coming around on Beasley. I love it.
I don't know I'm coming around on Beasley. I'm more of, like... I'm in... Look, Deshaun Stevenson started in the NBA Finals. J.R. Smith won in the NBA Finals as a starting two-guard and was, the fourth most important player on the championship team. Like, these things are just gonna happen. So, sure, why can't Michael Beasley be enough to help a playoff team in some regard? Like... You know, there's lots of guys. I mean, here's the thing. His defense is better right now than Jabari Parker's. I mean, it just is. Like, it's just better. Like, Jabari's defense, I really started to pay attention to it. And the problem is it's just one of those things where the minute you notice it, you can't stop noticing it. Damari Carroll versus the Raptors, when they played the Raptors, he got like three open three-pointers in the first half just because Parker was just spacing out off ball. Just doing weird stuff like they trapped Lowry on a double with two other players, and yet Parker's like inching up to do absolutely nothing while Carroll gets to the corner, allowing Lowry to hit him for a corner three-pointer. It's like the worst possible decision you can make. I feel like this Bucks team might be better with a trade, and I think Monroe's playing well, and I think Parker still has a lot of value. So, like, I wonder if they might be a team that should look for maybe, like, a reconfiguration. But the problem is that, like, they've got good players, and getting teams to, like, acknowledge, yeah, we need to change even though these guys are good is really difficult.
Yeah, I think, look, the Monroe thing is tenuous, right? Like, he was out of the lineup for a while, and he was healthy. And I think they've kind of decided this is an awkward fit. And at this point, it's like he has an option next year, I think. They're hoping he won't opt into it, but it's like he can be a sort of helpful bench scorer for them, but defensively it's a problem. I think you can get Monroe if you want him, and the Bucks would be fine with that. But also, if they end up just keeping him for the rest of the season as that guy and they make the playoffs, then I guess they'll be okay with it. When it comes to Parker, like, I think he's just not really a fully formed player yet, and that's okay because he's so young, but it's a little weird because he's like so developed as an athlete, and like when you talk to him, he's so polished and smart, and you'd sort of expect his game to reflect that, but it doesn't really. Like, he makes those sort of head-scratching plays defensively. He's sort of caught in between positions, which is like a thing that we don't really say that often anymore in a positionless league. But I think when you're the size that he is, but you're not an awesome rebounder, and you're also not great at spacing the floor, then it's sort of a problem. And he's at least shooting the threes just this year. Before, he didn't. And I think there's a world of potential there. But I mean, Giannis is clearly much farther along than Parker is. And I think, you know, at the beginning of last year, they were sort of thinking like they're sort of on the same level, maybe, when Parker came back from his injury and looked pretty good. But yeah, I mean, in terms of thinking the game, in terms of like figuring out like who you are as an NBA player, Giannis is on a whole other level.
If you had to buy stock in one of these two teams, which would you buy stock in? Would you buy stock in the Pacers or the Magic? You have to buy
stock. Oh man, what if I don't want to buy stock in either?
You have to buy stock in one of them.
Ugh. All right, I guess I'll buy them in the Pacers, because I mean, they started turning it around before they got their guys back from injury, and now they're back. So there's kind of reason for optimism, but I'm still not super optimistic
over
about the Pacers.
Over the
this
last
year.
11 games, the Pacers are sixth in defense. The Magic are
first. Yeah, I mean, if they sustain that, then awesome, right?
The Magic are first.
Because that's my big question with them. That was my big question at the start of the year.
Two wins versus the Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, who saw that coming?
Who now everyone is jumping off now. Everyone's like, same old Clippers. Same old Clippers losing to the Pacers and the Nets. And I'm like, not worried.
Just watch them beat the Cavs, too.
Yeah,
like,
I'm not worried
which
about
is it?
I'm not worried about them at all. I'm just, for me, okay, I think they lost the Pistons game because they decided to stay in Dallas for that Thanksgiving game, which was stupid. Like, I'm glad that you had fun hanging out with the Cowboys, but that was stupid. It messed up your schedule, and you lost to the Pistons. I think they match up badly with the Pacers for whatever reason, because, like, the Raptors match up badly with the Kings, right? Like, that's like a thing that happens. And the Kings are definably worse than the Raptors. And then the Nets game.
Are they?
Are they, though?
yes, they are.
And then the Nets game. Look, the Nets are going to do this. The Nets play hard. The Nets play consistently. The Nets have guys like Sean Kilpatrick who can go off. They have Brook Lopez. Like, the Nets are a bad team, but they're a really good bad team. And I'd rather be a good bad team than a really bad good team. I really would. I'm serious. I'd rather be like the Nets right now, even though they have no picks and no future, than like, I'm trying to think who's like the worst good team.
Like the Pacers?
Are they good though? I don't even know if they qualify.
I don't know.
Maybe the Pistons. because I'm just not sure. I'm just not sure how good the Pistons are.
Like, I'm feeling good about the Pistons, man. Like, I know they're at 500.
They're just so inconsistent. But they're just so inconsistent.
Yeah, but now they have Reggie back, and I think he'll be a really steadying influence for them. Like, I know he, as a player, in terms of, like, his scoring output is erratic, but you know how he's going to play every night. He can get guys shots. He can get into the paint, and I think him being back in the lineup should do a great deal in terms of helping them figure out what they're doing offensively, because that was a big adjustment. I mean, he ran more pick and rolls than anybody, and that was who they were on offense, and then they suddenly didn't have him. Honestly, and I thought the job that Van Gundy did defensively for them in the first half of the year to, like, stay afloat when Reggie was out, that's huge. So if they could just sustain that and he gives them a boost offensively, then I feel good about them.
Honestly, I'm only saying Pistons because I'm trying to avoid saying Blazers. That's just I'm just trying to not say that the Blazers, because the Blazers are a really bad good team. They're just,
you and I cannot have a podcast without talking about the Blazers, can we? It's impossible.
I mean, there's certain teams that we're just going to hit because they're the stories, right? Like, there's just, you know, it's, there's not much. I have nothing to say about the Sixers. Like, Joel's great. Saric has nights where he looks good. There's nights when Saric looks terrible because he's a rookie, and that's okay. Like, I don't know. The rest of that team, I'm like, I don't know how to evaluate you because half your guys don't belong in the league and the other half are playing with guys that don't belong in the league. So I don't know.
Hey, but Brett Brown said that Ben Simmons is going to play point guard when he comes back.
Yeah, that's exciting. I'm excited for them in, like, February. That'll be exciting. I'm excited for them then. But, you know. Hey, I didn't talk to you about the Bulls today. We got through a podcast without me haranguing you about the Chicago Bulls. So so we're going on one. What's one team you're wanting to keep a real close eye on this week?
Look, it's weird, but I can't stop watching the Wolves, like, every time that they're on.
You're just like, this is going to be the one. They're going to turn it around.
Hey, it's possible that the last one was the one.
Do you remember when you told me that they were definitely going to get the rematch versus the Knicks, and then the Knicks swept them?
Yeah. I mean, it was close, though.
It was. Like, it was close. They hung with those juggernaut super team Knicks.
The Knicks somehow always win at home. They've lost, like, one game at home recently. But I was at that Wolves-Knicks game, and it was super weird. It was, like, another typical Wolves game where they alternately look great and unstoppable and then, like, completely invisible. Like, they just completely fall asleep. And I thought that last game they had against Charlotte, and it went into overtime. Kemba hit some big shots. The Wolves just stuck with it. Wiggins hit a big three. They had a huge overtime in terms of scoring. And they pulled it out. And I'm not saying it's the turning point, but I'm not saying it's not the turning point. We'll see.
I'll say it's not the turning point.
Why?
Last 11, they're 21st in offense, 22nd in defense. What's this team good at?
But this is the weird thing with them all year, is, like, it's not like during the course of one game, like, you see entirely different teams. Like, I think even still now, I could be wrong, but if you pull up the stats, we can figure it out. I think even still now, if you just pull up, like, first half stats, Wolves have, like, the best net rating in the NBA.
Just hang on. Just before you continue.
Tell me if they still do.
I need to tell you this real quick. So you think that the Hornets win might have been the turning point for them, right?
It could be.
Right? Okay, listen.
I don't know.
This is their schedule. Spurs at Raptors, Pistons, Warriors at Bulls, Rockets, Suns, Hawks, Kings, Thunder, Hawks. Now, back half of that's fine. The Hawks have fallen into trash, and the Kings are bad. But Spurs, Raptors, Pistons, Warriors, Bulls, Rockets. That's their upcoming schedule.
It's not great.
No, it is definably not great. In the dictionary under not great with a hyphen, it says that schedule.
But if they do pull out just a couple of those, they'll start feeling really good about themselves.
Yeah, I just don't
I'm know. Not jumping off the ship. I've seen, like, this is the thing. Like, this is why they're so fascinating to me. This is why I can't turn away. It's because it's like the story is just not as simple as they're bad.
Yeah.
Because we've seen great individual performances by a bunch of these guys. We've seen even, like, we've seen their bench look good sometimes, which nobody really thought would happen. Like the Knicks game that I went to, like their bench was awesome. Their starters were the reason they lost the game. They find new and creative ways to lose all the time, which is interesting, but not what they hoped for. And it's taking them a while to figure out the defensive end, which everybody thought that Thibodeau would be able to magically fix right away. And I still see that talent there. I still see all the reasons why we're excited about them going into the season. And I see them play stretches of every game where it looks like things are clicking. And maybe the schedule's too tough for them to get on a roll now, but I'll be watching those games. Like, I don't think they're going to go in and get blown out by all these good teams. Like, they have been able to be competitive. They just haven't been able to win close games or play a consistent, like, full 48-minute game a lot of the time.
Their January schedule is really soft. After this stretch that I just described to you, they play the Suns twice, they play the Mavericks twice, they play the Nuggets twice, they play the Nets, they play the Wizards. They've got a real opportunity in January to go on a run. So they basically just
there's some last year's Blazers potential in there, is what you're saying.
They just got to get through this. They have to get through this stretch. Because the problem, though, is like, all right, if they go, this is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 game stretch. If they go 2-4 in that stretch, even if they find two wins in there, okay, they're now going to be 8-18, 10 games under 500.
Yeah, in the West, that's tough.
And like, we're not even talking playoffs. I'm talking about, like, getting, like, you want to be around 500 at least at the end of the year. Like, they need to be at least, like, 39, I think, is anything lower than 39 wins, I think that it has to be considered a pretty, a real disappointment for the season. I just don't think you can say, like, I don't think they can win 35 games and feel good about it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they won't. Like, their internal expectations are so much higher, like, it was funny being at that game, like some of the questions that were being asked of Thibodeau and of the players were like, look, you had these high expectations and now, you know, you've been through this part of the season. The record is what it is. How do you kind of recalibrate and adjust like your approach now? And pretty much uniformly, the answers that I heard were like, no, like we're not recalibrating. Like we are going to continue believing in ourselves. We think we're a really good team. We think we can do something special here. And I mean, at this point of the year, that's all they can say, right? Like they have to keep trying to get this thing together and trying to string some wins together, because it's too early for them to just write this thing off.
Not to get too, I mean, this is way far in the distance, but just so we know, like, yeah, they have a really soft January. Their March is death. They have an absolutely horrific March. They face Jazz, Spurs, Blazers, Clippers, Warriors, Bucks, Wizards, Celtics, Heat, Pelicans, Spurs, Lakers, Blazers in that stretch. Just that March stretch is, and most of them are on the road. So if they're going to get right, they've got 2.5 months to basically get right. That's where it comes down. And they can, right? They're 8 games under 500. You chip away at it. That's the better thing. Like, they need one little spurt, like a 4-game winning streak, and then just kind of, like, keep gaining. That's how you get back into it. But,
yeah,
you know,
like, let me ask you, like, have you, like, do you like watching them? Like, to me, like, I'm not really approaching these Wolves games as, like, I don't care if they win or not, really. Like, I'm not a Wolves fan. I like watching the guys play. And it's been puzzling, like, why they've struggled more than I thought, but, like, they're still one of my, like, go-to league pass teams all the time.
I like watching them. I like watching Zach LaVine a lot. I think it's tough because, like, I had such high expectations for Towns. It's just tough. Like, you kind of want, I want to see more from him. And the numbers are good, but I keep waiting for, like, Towns to be like, Towns! And sometimes he is, but
he got 47 one game last week.
In a loss.
And then he blamed himself for the loss.
In a loss to the Knicks. Yeah, I'm a little bit worried. I told a certain colleague of ours, ex-former colleague of ours, current colleague? Anyway, a friend of ours. I told him that I was worried that that Garnett may have, like, done a whiplash from him, on him. And we're now, yeah, like, this kid's just like, I mean, you know, it's like, no, you scored 47 points. Like, you're gonna lose these games. That's okay. Like, it's not all on you, man. Like, it's just, yeah, not how it works.
No, I don't want to step on something I'm writing, but, like, I directly asked him about that and talked to some of his teammates, and, like, this is, like, totally fascinating to me. The fact that he's playing so well the most part, but if absolutely anything goes wrong, it's not just the comments afterward when we hear him blame himself for losses that are clearly not his fault. Like, you can see it on the court. Like, he is so outwardly hard on himself, and he has such high expectations for his own game. And you kind of wonder, like, is this even healthy? Like, you kind of want to be like, dude, you're like 21 and you're like, you're amazing. Just be patient. But he is that guy that every time somebody asks about their youth and whatever, he just completely dismisses it and says it doesn't matter that we're a young team. We're not going to be patient. We want to be good right now. The playoffs are the goal this year. That's just that's what he thinks. And he holds himself to a Garnett-like standard, even though he is not Garnett yet.
Well, I hold myself to a Garnett-like standard, which means that often now in DNP, CD, I'm like late Garnett. But you should still give us lots of reviews on iTunes. Check us out on SoundCloud. James, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.